So, recently, I was chatting with Mary Troy, a mentor and a friend, about what we're reading of late, which is a fairly common conversation among writers, and a good icebreaker for me when social anxiety kind of grabs a hold of my throat. And we ran through a bit of what's just been released. We always keep tab on what's being published, how good someone's follow-up was, all of those things that writers talk about. But Mary and I, and I think just about everyone else who's a serious reader, tends to gravitate towards a writer that's out of the public eye. Usually the best work rarely gets the brightest spotlight. And that's when Mary told me about a woman who she believed was one of the very best short story writers in the country, Gladys Swann. In her recent collection, A Garden Among Fires, the thread in these 9 wonderful stories is that new faces, the landscape of what we expect of people, can't really be trusted. The garden, a symbol of home and cultivation, is always under attack. Her stories are driven by and enriched by images, settings, and locations that are evocative in color and meaning. A purple cactus against a purple mountainscape. The pear tree. A thick morning fog. In Traveling Light, the third story in her most recent collection, the location of the story is deceptively simple. A hotel room. Bringing their daughter's car home, the protagonist, Phoebe, and her husband stop for the night at this particular motel. She can't sleep. The walls are too thin, and the neighbors next door are drinking. She dresses and heads over to tell them to keep it down a little bit, and instead, she finds herself invited inside. Drink in hand, she begins to hear about the troubled lives of their children. Phoebe herself has a daughter who, quote, seemed always to be casting about in desperation, some kind of demonic impulse pushing past everything Phoebe knew could bring to the surface of love or patience or good ideas. Stories with strangers always brim with tension. The unfamiliarity of people creates this wonderful intrigue in their worlds and gestures, a rich ambiguity, so to speak. And here, the surface stories of these children loved and lost changes Phoebe, creates an awareness about herself and her daughter Helen that she could never discover on her own. This type of interaction of people, so much of what we leave unsaid, is what makes Gladys's work so compelling. Like a painter, which in fact she is, this is the awareness of how to color, shade, and form the subtext of a story, and keeps her stories in our minds long after we've closed the book. This most recent collection, just released on Bookmark Press, is available for sale right next to my friend Kevin. It is her most recent collection, and she's the author of 6 other books of fiction, 5 collections of short fiction, and the novels Carnival of the Gods and Ghost Dance, A Play of Voices. Her short stories have appeared in several literary journals, including the Beloit Fiction Journal, Green Mountains Review, New Letters, The Ohio Review, Other Voices, Prairie Schooner, and many, many others. She's been awarded the Tate Prize for her poetry and the Lawrence Foundation Award for fiction. She's taught previously in the creative writing departments at the University of Missouri Columbia and Vermont College's MFA program. Currently, she resides in Columbia, Missouri, and we're thrilled to have her here tonight. Please welcome Gladys Swann.
Thank you very much for that introduction. And since you have some idea of what Traveling Light is about, I'll just read it. Though there were brief intermittent bursts of sun as they headed through the hills of eastern Pennsylvania, clouds gathered steadily over the day with a threat of rain, lowering skies, without the solace of each other's company, for they were traveling in separate cars. Ralph was in their daughter Helen's Ford Escort, and Phoebe was driving their Nissan Sentra. They were returning from Connecticut, where they had gone to pick up Helen's car and were heading back to Indianapolis. Phoebe had been listening to Haydn and Mozart to lighten her mood. Ralph had alternated between the news and Irish folk songs. They'd come together for lunch, chicken soup and salad at a truck stop along the interstate, their conversation mostly observations about other diners, an old habit of their life together. "Look at that old man over there. He doesn't pause, just keeps shoveling in. Arm going like a pump handle, doesn't look to the right or left, like nobody else is there. And what was his singular hunger, Phoebe wondered. Did he have a tapeworm? And could he never get fed, like their daughter? Now the dark heaviness above them threatened to descend full force, and Phoebe had no desire to wait for a downpour. Blinking the lights, their agreed-upon signal, she hoped Ralph would turn off at the next exit that promised lodging. It was already after 4, and she was bone-tired. By the time they got home, they would have traveled nearly a week. It was a slow trip, what with patches of fog awaiting them each morning and trucks looming out of it, coupled with their need to keep in sight of each other. Ralph got the message and moved to the exit. They came together in front of a Best Western, and Phoebe waited while Ralph went in to register. When he came out, he signaled for her to follow, and they pulled into the parking area in front of their ground floor room. It seems like it always rains when we cross Pennsylvania, Phoebe said. Maybe we're just lucky that way. Look, he said, as they carried in their overnight bags, these folks aren't put off by a little damp. 2 motorcycles had cruised up to the space in front of the room next to theirs and stopped. The travelers were well equipped with rain gear and helmets, and as both couples descended and the men parked their vehicles, they greeted each other, laughing and talking. The women freed themselves from their helmets while the men unpacked their gear for the night. One of the women shook out a mop of curly, whitish blonde hair. She didn't come into the world that way, Ralph said. Why do women want to dye their perfectly good hair? But that wasn't what caught Phoebe's attention. I'd like to travel like that, she asserted, as she watched them from their picture window, go whipping down the highway with just the necessities. Someday, she thought, she'd like to go to Europe with just a toothbrush and a change of clothes. A friend of theirs had once traveled to Central America, sitting behind her boyfriend on a Harley. When they got there, they turned around and came back. The sort of fool thing you did when you were young. But both these couples were middle-aged, paunchy men, balding, one with a trimmed beard, the other content with a mustache. A potential statistic for a fatal accident, Ralph said, always the realist. Besides, you'd hate it, hard on the kidneys for one. Of course she'd hate it, but latent in the idea was something that appealed to her. I like my creature comforts, he said, as if she didn't know, and that seat in Helen's car isn't among them. I can't wait for a hot shower and a good bed. As the rain started pelting down, the two couples dashed inside. Not a moment too soon, Phoebe said. Guess they're sharing a room. How well did 2 sets of people have to know each other before they did that? She drew the curtain and lay down on the bed and closed her eyes while Ralph perused the New York Times he'd bought at the last gas station they'd stopped at. An inveterate newspaper reader, he went through the daily offering from start to finish. He needed his daily fix of cynicism, he claimed. What better fuel? It would fill an hour before they went out to eat. By then, the rain had let up. They were able to find an Italian restaurant, Luigi's, nothing fancy, where they ate for the most part in silence, too tired for speech. You're not eating, Ralph said, watching her pick at her food. Phoebe pushed aside her plate of half-eaten pasta. Is that a comment on the food? Phoebe smiled. It just gets me, she said. Not even telling us until it's done. Yanking Emily out of school in the midst of winter, when she's just getting over scarlet fever, without even waiting for the end of the school year. Abandoning everything and everyone. Throwing away her degree and what she thought she wanted. What is in her head? He reached over and took her hand. We can't live their lives for them. He was a quiet man who seemed always to keep a distance from things, from people. At times, his stance offered a certain equanimity, but not at the moment. And no matter what we've done, we've certainly made a lot of mistakes with Helen. But it isn't just that, Phoebe protested. It's almost as if she's determined that no matter what we did, it would be the wrong thing. He shrugged. We tried. Ever since she was little, I've watched her put obstacles in her way, do the thing most to her disadvantage. Maybe our notion of what her life should be doesn't fit who she is. Maybe it's in the genes. But she doesn't seem to know either. And how did it all translate into experience? Biology as destiny? And where did that leave anyone in the scheme of things? Somehow, their daughter seemed always to be casting about in desperation, some sort of demonic impulse, pushing past everything Phoebe knew or could bring to the service of love or patience or good ideas. Some sort of forward movement that seemed always cruelly lost in the chaos, the dark rush of her daughter's hysteria and panic, her disillusion and despondency, her fear. That was a big one. Phoebe knew a few things about fear, had felt it over her head as Helen was propelled by those urges that kept getting her nowhere. I had the terrible feeling that this time she broke off. She didn't want to create a reality from what she feared. Come, he said. It's a hard trip, and the sooner we're home, the better it'll be. They got up, and she waited while he paid the check. At their room, they entered a different climate. Loud music pulsed through the wall that separated them with occasional bursts of raucous laughter. A little party, Ralph said dryly, to celebrate our arrival. Do they think they're kids? Phoebe said. She tried to concentrate on the front page of the newspaper while Ralph took a shower. She could see their neighbors flaked out on their beds with their beers and snacks, absorbed in having a good time. By now, the voices sounded as though they had multiplied by three. Well, I know it's early, but I'm calling it a night, Ralph said, emerging with a towel around him. He put on his pajamas, then came over to where she was sitting and kissed her goodnight. I can't sleep yet, she said. I'll read a while. When she looked up again, Ralph had a light snore going. The man could sleep through an air raid. But she was wide awake. She couldn't read anymore, and putting the newspaper aside, the obsessions she traveled with took over. Perhaps Ralph was right. When she stood back, she saw how uselessly her mind kept making its round over and over the same ground without anything to show for it. Phoebe had a sudden image of Helen at the swimming pool when she was six, running and leaping without thought into the deep end. She didn't know how to swim. Phoebe had jumped in and pulled her out. Since then, Helen's life had been a series of leaps into the deep end, with calls for rescue, each rescue a tenuous business, always under threat despite all the therapies, all the bouts in the hospital, and the countless hours devoted to her particular form of suffering. From the beginning, she'd never quite fit into the world, was miserable in school, afterward in whatever job she managed to get, brilliant, full of dreams, hard on herself, hard on others, then picking up to go to the next new place that promised the answer to whatever dream lived in her head, the new paradise. Europe again this time, leaving others to pick up the pieces as though, Phoebe thought resentfully, they were called upon to put aside any dream of their own, either to foster hers or to pick up the shattered remains, as though she alone were entitled to step out of the human condition. I don't think she believes we love her, Phoebe had said once. Now she wondered if Helen had ever loved herself. I think she believes she's unloved by the universe. She undressed and slid into the other double so as not to disturb Ralph, and lay there listening to the sounds of Jubilee next door. It was past 10 o'clock. Why couldn't they show a little respect for their fellow travelers? Finally, after tossing from one side to the other, she got up, put on her clothes, and went to rap on her neighbor's door. The woman with the blonde hair opened up, looked at her, and greeted her like a long-awaited guest. "Come on in," she said. "Join the party." She held out her hand. "I'm Lucille," she said. "My friends call me Lucy, and my pals call me Lou." "That's after the initiation," she added with a laugh. "Look, Lucille," Phoebe said, "I'm dog-tired, and..." "You look a bit worn around the edges," she said, giving her a straight look. "I know the feeling. Give yourself a little boost and have a drink with us. A nightcap," she persisted. With such good humor, Phoebe was disarmed. Too much for her in this well-stacked, broad-hipped woman poured into her blue jeans, formidable in her dark blue western shirt and looped silver earrings, her eyes accented with shadow and liner, her lips quite perfect. "You're next door, aren't you? And we're keeping you up. I'm sorry. No hard feelings, okay? We'll be knocking off at 11. Pronto. Come on, have a drink. You look like you need one." "Have a drink with us," the other voices chorused. "We're celebrating." Two other couples she hadn't seen before were sitting around on the beds and chairs. They introduced themselves. Jerry, a chunk of a man with bushy black hair and beard. Mac, thin, with a narrow-shouldered, scholarly look. Their wives, Karen and Marcella, the first a mere child compared to the others, a cradle robbery, Phoebe thought. Her glance took in one after the other. "Look," she wanted to say, "you don't know me. I don't like motorcycles. Not really. I hate TV and video games and loud music and telemarketers and cell phones, and I don't go to church. Right now I'm bone tired and..." "Well, just one," Phoebe said, and then thought, "I didn't say that." Someone else had spoken from inside her skin. When had she ever barged into strange company? "You just come right in, hon," Lucy said. "We've got beer and Jack Daniels," said one of the hosts, beer in hand. "Greg," he said, shifting so that he could shake hands with her. "Don't mind us. We're harmless." "A little Jack Daniels," she said, resigned. She wasn't one to go stalking off to the management to complain. He handed her a plastic cup and the bottle. "There's ice if you want it. Water in the pitcher." "Come over here," Lucy said, after she'd introduced everybody. "Tell us where you've come from and where you're going. Tell us your story. Here, make way, you guys. What's your name, darling?" "Phoebe." "Well, isn't that special? A little room here. You can move over, Patsy. She's my sister. Half-sister, to be exact. But we're sisters all the way to the bottom." They didn't look much alike. Patsy was small and short, a pert-looking woman with pushed-up nose and bright eyes. Her hair was hennaed. "Phoebe," Patsy said, considering. "Never knew anybody named that." "It's a bird," Phoebe said. "My folks were reaching for something different." "We're birds, too," Greg said. "Birds of a feather, right, Lou?" "Just flock down that highway," Lucy said, "every chance we get." "Throw a couple of things in the bag and we just take off," Greg added. "That Harley'll take you anywhere you want to go." "What sort of birds?" Phoebe wondered. "Lonesome doves, bar birds, raucous crows, garrulous geese, night hawks." They arranged themselves on one of the beds, and Phoebe told them they'd gone east to bring their daughter's car back to keep while she was in Europe working. If, she did not add, she could find a job or keep one once she got it. "They do move around," Lucy said with a sigh. Hard keeping track of them. Well, mine's got a boyfriend now, Patsy said, and he's nearly as crazy as she is. If he doesn't do drugs, Lucy said meaningfully, she's ahead of the game. Only listen to this, Patsy said to Phoebe. Apparently Lucy already knew the details. Now she's complaining her ex is some kind of pervert, comes naked into their son's bedroom. I really can't believe this, Lucy said, also to Phoebe. I think she's making it up. Already, Phoebe thought, they were beyond any formalities. Nowadays, it seemed people didn't hover over their secrets, but were ready to open their lives before millions of people. She could have been watching a TV show. Maybe life was just too hard to take on. Yet, there you were, stuck with it. May as well let everybody in on it. It drives me wild, Patsy said. Why would she send Timmy there weekends if it was true? Only leave it to her. She says, I've got to have some time to myself. Is that a reason? Would she really do that if she wasn't crazy? Unless she just wants to ruin Don's reputation since he's trying to get custody. It just came to me. What do you think? Lucy said, turning abruptly to Phoebe. Maybe we should get an outside opinion. Open a door, and there was a riddle being handed to her. That's a tough one, she said, taking refuge in the whiskey. Canny or crazy or irresponsible, take your pick. And who was telling the truth? Have you asked the boy? He's only 4, Patsy said. You can't expect him to know what's going on. I think, good grief, what if she's putting ideas in his head? She has to be making it up. But if I say anything, she'll say, you're just against me. You've always been against me. So I keep my mouth shut. Lucy shrugged. What can you do? The world gets crazier every day. Here, let me pour you a dab more. Phoebe let her take her glass. Drink long enough with anybody, and pretty soon you drank down to the common ground where the dumpsters were and all the garbage for the common human apartment. What a kind of relief she let go of. Whatever kept her on the daylight track, contained, even numb. She'd better not drink too much, though, or she'd be offering them Helen, emptying the whole pot. She was afraid to know all that was in there. Listen, Lucy said, people do what they want to do, and if it looks crazy from the outside, that's because we're outside. I bet it makes perfect sense to them. Something just comes over her, Patsy went on. She tells these stories, and you don't know what's true and what isn't. You know how little kids are, Lucy said, how you can't tell if it really happened or they're making it up. Well, she's like that, only she's 31. Worse and worse, Phoebe thought. Oh, that's a tough one, she said again. But think, if she ruins his reputation, Lucy said, he'll be out of a job, and she'll be out of child support. She's not working now. She gained a lot of weight, and she can't stand on her feet because of her arthritis. She got it young. The whiskey tasted better and better. Phoebe hadn't had any for a long time, and it gave her a buzz. You want to get hold of something, she said, only it never lies flat. She patted the surface of the bed. You try to get a fix on it, and it goes, whoosh. She flailed her arm out in front of her. You've got it right, Patsy said. Boy, have you got it right. Whoosh, Phoebe said, and let her arm go again. Jack Daniels had it right. A good man to make a woman happy, even 2 or 3. It seemed as good an explanation as any. This time, one of the other men, she already forgotten their names, came along with the bottle. I think you girls need another round, he said. The music had been turned down low to something sweet. At times, the voices became more confidential, then erupted again into laughter. I've got one for you, too, Lucy said. Riddle me, Phoebe said. I'm the mother of the riddle house. She couldn't follow the next unfolding exactly. It was Lucy's son, a good boy, had his degree in computer engineering and got a high-powered job in the industry. Big money, but he was working his ass off, just getting the work piled on him. And the more he did, the more they wanted out of him. like a dog, just like a dog. They were ready to work him into the ground. Didn't have any life of his own. Worked nights and weekends. Got more and more despondent. Wouldn't tell anybody because he thought he was a failure. Started doing crack and drinking. Got sick. Got fired. Couldn't get a job. His money, his girlfriend, his car, his apartment. I'm afraid, Lucy said. Phoebe couldn't find her way out of that one either. She was overcome by the feeling that one by one, each of those present in the room, each of the men and all of the women, would unfold for her a tale about someone in the throes of a dilemma that went to the roots of their lives and ask her to resolve it. She'd been chosen, queen of Gordian knots. They'd all gotten on their Harleys and gone speeding down the interstate for the sake of emptying their minds and enjoying a little respite with a couple of drinks and music, to flow into forgetfulness. For Ralph, it was football, and there was always sleep, precious sleep that she so longed for. Only they'd taken their riddles with them to lay at her feet, a test, and whatever answer she would give for the moment sound good and true. And they would thank her and feel grateful that she had joined their party and drunk their liquor. And then, in the next moment, they would see that her answer was a flimsy thing. They'd hold it up and look at the holes and laugh. They would inspire a new that would inspire a new riddle, more complex and imponderable than the one before. And it would go on, for now Patsy's daughter and Lucy's son seemed to have got mixed up with Helen, and it didn't matter which strand you pulled, you just got all the others. The night would go on till the pile of riddles reached beyond the beyond and dissolved into a single riddle, and the laughter would rise around her till she couldn't tell whether she and her failure was the source of the hilarity or whether it lay in drunken comedy of what they were trying to do. It can't be done. She turned to them as if that was all the light she could shed on the subject. Her pronouncement for the moment, meaning that you couldn't drink enough or stay drunk long enough or travel enough miles or ever travel light enough, or that it didn't exist, that traveling light she had always hoped for, been looking for to put her faith in, some ray touching at the edge of things, as in the dingy apartment she entered where her daughter and granddaughter lived, a student apartment, cheap enough for the fortunes of students. All her daughter's stuff lay in boxes that anonymous friends had packed for her and were taking to store who knows where and for how long. Left behind on the refrigerator was a collage Emily had made of things drawn and cut out, a world of cats. Emily had a passion for cats and flowers, with a great blue-winged butterfly hovering at the center. Phoebe stood in front of it, then took it down and laid it carefully in the car. She'd have that at least, the gleam of a certain potential, the sort of potential she'd seen in Helen when she was little, had seen it, wanted to brood over it and foster it in her chick. Was it love or imagination that hatched it, or both? And where did the promise go? Is that where the riddle lies, in some hidden thing? She struggled to stand up. She tried for balance on unsteady feet. I have to go now, she said, if my husband wakes up. It's been real nice to meet you, Lucy said, rising also. You never did tell us about that daughter of yours. I guess we just gabbled on. Glad you came, she heard around her. She walked into the coolness outside and felt a relief from the stuffiness of the room. The voices, the music fell away, and she was alone again with a sensation she could never quite define, but which she knew as herself, as though it all came home to that pulsing spark, blindly aware of beyond itself. She looked around with a certain wonder that she was standing there, at that moment, in this place. A wet fog had softened the darkness, the lights of approaching cars cutting through it briefly and vanishing like mechanical fireflies. Only the neon lights of the motel remain steady, creating a faint aura around each of the red and yellow letters.